Hi everyone, welcome to this episode of Boma Chat. My name is Marcella Satera.
And I'm Chad Goldstein.
And today we have the amazing Cheche Dao with us. I'm going to discuss all things education in Africa.
Welcome to the Boma, Cheche.
Thank you, Jed and Marcella. It's very nice to be here to have this conversation about education. A subject that's very close to my heart, both in the good and the painful realities that are facing the continent and children right now in the space of education. Yeah.
It's great to have you here. And we just want to open up the forum and open up the discussion with asking you a little bit about what you're doing with the Dao Academy. And what problem is it that you're trying to solve with the school that you founded?
Like you said, we run the Dao Academy. We own and run the Dao Academy, which is, to use American terminology, is a pre-K to grade 12. So daycare, age 2, all the way to end of high school, which is age 18, in Mutshudi, Botswana. And that's a village approximately 40, 45 kilometers north of the capital city of Botswana. And to be honest, the more time I spend with the kids in education, the more I read about it, the more I meet people, I really am convinced that quality, access to quality education is the only justice in this world. I've actually come to that conclusion because all the problems, no matter what they are, in the end, it comes down to choices, right? So it comes down to whether you decide to steal a country's reserve savings, or whether you decide to help somebody cross the road, whether you decide to cook or not to cook, or to what to do in this world is a function of your education. Now, education could be formal, it can be in schools, but it's all the things that you go through that actually sort of inform how you make your choices and the choice that you make. So the problem that I guess I'm trying to solve in the end is all of them, really.
That sounds pretty huge.
It's a very big ask, yes.
That is a very big ask. It sounds pretty huge. So tell us, what's driving you? Why are you doing it? And why is it important?
That's a very poignant question, Marcella, because I'm having a real crisis of, not faith so much, but a crisis of stamina at the moment. Mm. And no matter how much I try to think that it's impossible, I just still keep coming back to the fact that it has to happen. Like, basic education must evolve. It must evolve. We cannot keep going through this world and this life pretending that we're serving people in the current model. So what's driving me is that it's a lie that I refuse to participate in. It's not saying that I can change the whole system. But for my part, I guess when they ask you what you do with your life, I can say, well, I shot my shot. And that's what's driving me. And I have a 4-year-old, so she has to live in this world. She has to live in this country, in this village, in this community. And while I could go and get a nice job somewhere and get paid a lot of money and buy the education that I think she deserves and should get, it doesn't change the world in which she lives, in the context in which she lives. So I can't pretend that she's going to live in isolation. She is not. So I must try, at least in her 20, 30, 40 kilometer radius to have the impact, whatever impact that we can have in education. That's why I do what I do. But I am tired. I won't lie to you. I am exhausted.
You mentioned that there are certain problems with the current model of education that are glaringly obvious to you. And that's one of the reasons why you've started the Dao Academy. Can you tell us a little bit about how the Dao Academy is addressing those problems and what it is you are doing differently?
Okay, so the big problem, there are many problems, but one of the real sort of ones that cuts across is really kind of giving a real return to every child, because kids across the world wake up in the morning and go to school for generally the same amount of hours and they're in the same country. And so the huge gap in the short term, anyway, that we are trying to plug is to say, if a child is waking up and is going to give you at least 13 years of your life, of their life, in basic education, of their time, they should have something to show for it. So in the short term, because you do have to kind of take it piecemeal, that we're trying to address is to say, at age 18, when a child leaves high school, fine, that those that are going to go to university and go and become whatever professions they're going to choose. But at a child at 18, after having given you 13 years of their life, they must be able to do something for themselves. Now, whether that's something is bricklaying, it's plumbing, it's computer redesign, it's graphics, whether or not they are credentialed to actually do that, but they should be able to go out into this world and say, I do have something to offer. I gave a school 13 years. I showed up. I was there. And at least I can do this. And we would really want to get to a point where an 18-year-old leaving our school, when they're asked, how far did you get an education, they won't apologize. Because currently too many kids kind of shrink and say, well, okay, I only got to high school, right? And it shouldn't be only high school. That's the longest job most people are going to have in their lives. And yet at the end of it, it's not clear why they put it in. So we want to sort of get away from this fallacy that all the kids are going to get A's and B's in maths and science and English. They're not. That's just a fact. And more of them could get those if we did better in terms of our learned experience design. But even if you don't get that, you should still get something of value. So we are trying to return that to the children and to actually sort of create a space where all children, no matter what their capacities are, have an opportunity to be celebrated and to shine in the space. So we do things like media, like coding, and media, I mean like film, creative sort of expression, voice, sports, journalism and newspaper. We have a radio station on our campus. And for us, because at the end of the day, though, education is contextual, right? So a big challenge that we have seen in our kids is that for too long, our education was very much sort of in abstraction to their lives and their reality and where they live. And therefore, there's an element of sort of presuming ignorance when you get the child at 5 or 6 years old. You teach them what music is, you teach them what language is or what stories are. But they've already had this all their lives, but you don't start there as a reference point. So you're trying to say, okay, fine, just because you're showing up and now you will be learning in English, it does not mean that your last 5 years of your life have meant nothing. There's been no value add. And we're trying to say, if we do teach you about music, you should be able to see it in your environment. Like you should see that your grandmother sings and that is music. It is not just being watched on YouTube, right? And art, yes, Picasso and Michelangelo are great, but people have been doing art all over the world for millennia. So why is that not where we begin? So that's kind of like sort of strong sense of self and value, intrinsic value. Not that you're going to come to our school and then we're going to make you valuable. No. So that's kind of the sort of the departure point we want to sort of take for our kids. And for us as well, Botswana, and I don't know, to some extent, maybe it's a Africa problem because I've been engaging a lot with a lot of educators across the continent, is the issue of voice and agency and just power. Like seeing yourselves in all the sort of, I guess, visible sort of demonstrations of power and influence that we see. So if our kids only watch movies with, you know, people that don't look like them, then they don't actually think they can make movies. They can be in movies, right? Which then you don't realize it, but then it translates to other things. Then when they say computer, they don't think they can actually fix it or build one because they come from some country somewhere in a box. So all they do is just use passively. And if they touch it too much, they actually break it. So we need to get away from that. And that's what we're trying to sort of give back to our kids. I mean, one of the things that I really did not realize, because I grew up in this country and I was, I was well educated, quote unquote, and I did well enough to go to university and the rest of it. But I remember the first time when I read a book and I actually realized that every book I'd read up until then, I assumed all the characters were white. And it was not a conscious thought that I had made until that moment, because I read a book from, I think it was from Asia somewhere. So I was actually thinking, okay, since this book is written by a Japanese person about Japan, and the people must definitely be Japanese, right? They cannot be English. But up until then, every book I read, because it didn't come from anybody in this country, it wasn't written by anybody in this country, I assumed, of course, the characters were white. It was never about us. And that is a problem, right? So that is what we want to sort of, return the power of actually believing you can influence the world and actually have a voice and have agency, and that it's a voice that should be heard, and having the courage to actually think that, no, your viewpoint is as valid and as important as anybody else. So it's a very, I would say, complicated problem, but it's something that you solve by a lot of small things in different places all over. So for instance, to give kids voice, okay, you put them on the radio, they see them on the screen, you put them in a movie, you give them comprehension passages that are about where they live. When you teach them about maps, you actually draw the map of the village, not necessarily a map of, you know, the tube in London. And it's small things, but it's things that you don't realize that actually have an effect, because then they actually think they actually exist in this world, not in tangent or in parallel or next to this world. So yeah, and that's why it's exhausting work, because effectively you're raising 600 plus children from, you know, 600 plus homes, households with whatever issues, whatever challenges, whatever backgrounds, and you're trying to sort of bring them and kind of create a shared culture that is about agency, about power. But you're creating, in a way, new societal norms for a strange society, because it's children, right? It's not adults. and they're not your kids. So they still have to go back into the real world and have to be faced, whether it's sexual harassment or being talked down to, or people not paying, but was, and you're still constantly having to counter it without necessarily attacking the parents or the society outright, because they still have to live in this country, in this culture. So it is a very complicated, I guess, way to solve it. And that's why it does take a lot of energy. But yeah, so I don't know if that really explains it, but it is a complex problem, a really complex problem.
Mm.
And therefore the solutions are many, and it requires a village. And some people, you may not agree with them and how they want to tackle and approach problems, but at the end of the day, in society, all those people exist. So while you want to teach your kids agency, they will come across the person who thinks you're a child, you're a girl, you're a what. So they must, in a way, experience it in this community, because they must learn to build a way to deal with it. So, yeah, it's a lot.
Yeah, that really resonates, especially the piece around representation and seeing ourselves, our stories, our voices being heard in the media, on different platforms, and also that creator piece and really unleashing that creative energy. I'm really excited to see what those 600 little humans produce. For you, when you think about that future and these lives that you're impacting, what does success look like?
Oh, man. Yeah, education is one of those things that there's success every day in many ways, like in really many ways. And it's one of those things that you really do have to listen, because any day on the school campus, there's success. There's a win for a child. There's a win for a teacher. There's a win for values, for, you know, sort of the direction you're trying to go in. So in the bigger, larger scheme, in terms of what a success look like, what a success looks like, I have very grand ideas about what, like, our campuses to look like, and currently they don't look that way. So that's just like the physical infrastructure and the space. I have very real aspirations for the artists, for the, whether it's creative, fine art, drama, music, all the ones that we don't give nearly the platform and space to actually be. And I would like to see that really sort of celebrated. I have really very big dreams for our language and our culture. Being from this place, we'll talk about it today, because we're trying to really sort of promote reconnection with the native language, the primary native language that we speak in our area. And it's really sort of fallen, it's falling more and more out of use, because it's not attractive in the way that English is on every platform, on YouTube, on Netflix, all these different platforms, right? So you're like, even just to teach your child the language, your language, is a real battle, because you're up against so much stimulus that's in a foreign language. So we're trying to think, okay, how do we return it back to the center for kids to actually think it's something that is cool, that is modern, they want to be associated with? Because it is a sell, whether you want to admit it or not. You do have to sort of convince the kids to do it. And then today we're talking about it, and I was like, you know, another thing that we need to get away from is this idea that African cultural identity or voice or language is kind of static. Like, I love art and I went to school abroad, whatever, England, whatever, US. And I went to museums all the time. And I was always just sort of affronted. You get to a museum, they say there's an African art exhibition. You get there, there's masks, some baskets. And it's like, are you kidding me? Like, so Africans don't paint oranges. Like, they don't paint cars. They don't paint the sky. Like, this is what... So it's kind of like, in a way, in a time capsule. And this is culture. And this is who we are. And this is what our art looks like. And I'm like, and sometimes it's even mislabeled. Like, you get there, you see baskets from Botswana, and they claim they're from Nigeria or from South Africa. And it's like, I know this is not from there, but of course you can't say that. So I would like the kids to feel they have permission to evolve the identity. And right now, it's just not there, because the reference is always to a point in time. So that's kind of what I would like to see for them doing in culture and language and identity. But I also see how far we have to go. So...
And Cheshi, the vision of success that you've just painted for us, what are the main barriers that will disallow you from realizing them?
Honestly, money, Jen.
Okay.
Money.
That's a good
one. No, and I'm going to be straight about it, because I am tired of all this finagling and romanticizing. At the end of the day, people who get up in the morning and help kids to survive, who are producing food, like, it doesn't matter, even in healthcare, these people... more often than not, give more of themselves and bear more of the burden for society. They subsidize the cost of getting children to age 18. They do, whether we want to admit it or not. And people pretend that that's not true, because it's convenient to actually pretend that way, look at it and think like you don't know. So we need money. Basic education needs money. And we don't need the money that is wrapped up in a lot of fancy English, and there's donors, and there's people, and there's agencies, intermediaries, blah, 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 blah. And at the end, you're not even sure how much of that money that left A actually got to be. That conversation needs to end. And right now, and I know it's difficult. I know there are people in the world who would like to actually fund education and real projects in education, not sort of like fly by nights and sort of, you know, whatever, fake operations. Mm. But now in the last few years, I've really come to appreciate there's like a whole business in playing intermediary, right? Playing the person who's going to go and find out if this is a place where you want to put money. And then the people who want money, the schools, whatever, first of all, they're already running on lean budgets. They're under-resourced, underfunded, under everything. And then they have to like smile and come to these meetings and hope that today is the day that I get a turn to get a donation or some sort of funding model to actually help my school survive. I am actually legit. I'm actually quite tired of it. I recently had to give something up and I was like, you know what, guys, no, I can't. I put in almost a year into this thing and I'm enjoying the camaraderie and the stuff. But in the end, I don't need help thinking how mathematics needs to be taught in the African context. I don't. I really don't. There are people who are capable on this continent to figure that out. And in fact, they figured it out. They're already running schools, even with next to no resources. What I need is somebody to put their money where their beliefs are. Because... And it's been actually really quite heartbreaking because I've been reading a lot, sort of like on views on how to teach kids and what's effective in classrooms, effective in learning, you know, how to support children, all the rest of it. And the sad reality is we long figure this out. Like we long established that kids learn differently. Mm-hmm. You have to teach at the right level. You have to put kids at the center. Kids learn through play. You need nice, safe space. Like we've long figured. There's been journals and journals. I mean, there are whole masters programs all over the world in education. So people know what needs to happen. But yet, in too many places, it's still not happening. And the reason why is resources. Schools are expensive. They really are. And also, it's resources. And I think the other challenge is that it's long, eh? Like a child who comes into grade one is 5 or 6 years old, and then you churn them out in 13 years. First of all, maybe you're not even going to be there by the time these kids come out of graduation to actually see what you've actually invested in. One. Two, are you actually going to enjoy the benefits of actually having well-educated kids? Maybe not. So I feel like there's that sort of thing. People I've found in the many conversations I've had, I'm more willing to fund like a diploma sort of university or you know, 4 year, right? Mm. But the 13 years, this one, the kids, we have to worry about scraped knees and counseling and tears and crying. They're happy to see them at age 18 when they're nice and clean and getting admitted to whatever university it is. And then 4 years later, they're happy to claim that university produced this. But you don't get an 18-year-old person. It's fairly well-formed. I mean, real talk. In those 4 years, fine, okay, fine. You can teach them, I don't know, sociology, anthropology, medicine, all the rest of it. But the fact of the matter is, what you got at 18, you knew also because you screened. So you knew this kid was already, somebody had already put in the work to get to this thing for you to finish it.
Yeah.
And then we want to claim as a success. So for me, we just need to just be honest. And put the resources that's where it is. So we need money, Jen.
Okay.
Let the record show.
Funding it is.
Yeah.
Well, yes.
I want to bring up the example of Rwanda. Paul Kagame in Rwanda, he turns the national language of the country from the native language languages that they speak there. And he turns it away from French too, maybe for, you know, to fight back against the colonial legacy, but he made it English. And his making it English and was, I think, a declaration that he wanted to demonstrate Rwanda was open for business. And Rwanda was piloting itself into this age of modernity. And so you had mentioned earlier that preserving the local language is something that's really important to you. And at Dow Academy, you are trying to preserve it. How do you balance the requirements of this age of modernity that we live in, where English is the lingua franca? Mm-hmm. Franca, is that the word?
Franca, yeah.
and then also the preserving of local tradition. Because you, obviously, it's very clear you want your kids to have the best lives that they can. You want them to be able to get good jobs. You want them to be able to have... So how do you balance those two pressures and tensions that exist?
You know, I actually don't think it's a tension. I think there's a level of arrogance in... people, like, when we learn English, of course we learn English, right? We learn the vowels and all the and the songs of it and the stories, right? And then people describe it as attention. Even when we're, for our kids, because they have to take English, they have to take Setswana, some of them even take French, right? And the teacher will say there's a tension between the language. I'm like, there's no tension between the languages. What you're failing to appreciate is that there's a lot of value that has yet to be unlocked in the local languages. Nobody has done enough work, really, when you look at it, whether it's studying them, whether the history, whether it's the music, whether it's the idioms, whether it's just the tapestry, and whether it is the way even that your brain works when you're actually in this other language. Mm-hmm. So for us to describe as a tension, it's unfair and it's premature on the native language. So no, there's no tension yet. What there is ignorance about what is sitting inside of these cultures. And because it's ignorance, the presumption, because they're not dominant cultures, is that the one that has dominated because it was the best, the most knowledgeable. And that is, I think, an erroneous sort of label to put on where we are in the world. Yes, that's my long answer.
Cool. That was a worthwhile question. Thank you for that response. The other question that I had for you is, what model of education inspired Dao Academy? Where did you get the operating model for Dao Academy from? Was there one source, or was it a number of different sources? Where did the inspiration come from?
Honestly, it came from everywhere. I mean, okay, from a sort of strictly speaking, at Form 5, which is end of high school, the kids sit for the Cambridge exam, the IGCSE. At the end of primary school, they sit for the primary school leaving exam, which is a national exam. But in terms of the approach and the model as to where it comes from, it's one of the things that I'm very privileged in that my mom, she's a Motswana, and she grew up in Motswana in village, and she's from pre-independence. So they were dirt poor. They all joke that they remember the first time they saw a cockroach. That's the kind of poor that everybody was. So they were all on food aid. They came on a train, apparently from the north. And so everybody was poor, right? And then they had like sort of significant increase in circumstances from the time they were kids to the time that they were adults, right? And my mom talks about listening to, when they were kids with her siblings, listening to the radio. And she says, so they were learning English at school, and then the only station was the BBC World Service. And she said the only thing they could hear was, this is the BBC World Service. And this person would talk. That was the BBC. And that's the only thing they could understand. Even though they were English. This is what I'm saying. Okay? That's the level that we sort of came from. But she married my dad, as it's actually not from Botswana. Like, technically it's my stepdad, but my dad is not from Botswana. But what also that meant is that when I grew up, I had a variety of cultures in my life, like Americans, Swedes, Spaniards, Germans, Zimbabweans, Zambians. Like, it was a proper mix of people. And because of such a mix of people, the things that we did in terms of for recreation, or the conversations that I had and the treatment I had from these different people, even though I was a child, I came to appreciate much later, was very different from a lot of people who grew up in more sort of homogeneous sort of households. And one of the things that we used to do a lot when I was a kid, because my dad loves the wild nature, wildlife. I mean, every bug, every tree, every grain of sand must be studied and looked at closely because, you know, it's just that amazing. He's a science teacher. So we used to go camping a lot, which was also an experience that most people my age did not have. And then when I went to abroad to university, I went to the US for my undergrad. I went to a college called Kenyon College, and it's a liberal arts institution. And that also kind of was amazing for me because it really is about sort of how you think. It's not so much about what is your object of study. So when I came back to Botswana, I was actually really amazed that the quality of my education, and not just being from the university or from high school, it was all of it. When I put it all together, I was just like, and my parents read a lot as well, like really read a lot. And I read a lot of science fiction, like a lot of science fiction fantasy books. So I was always sort of fascinated about what things could be. And I don't get me wrong, I was a coward. My bachelor's degree was in economics. My second degree was a law degree. My third one was law and finance. So I am as cowardice as they come. Because really, in the real world, in an education system that served me better, I would have been an artist. I would have been a fine artist and a writer.
Yeah, because all of your degrees were extremely pre-professional. They were all
cookie cutter.
That is the fear that I went into the world with. Like, this is what I have to do. I did not feel that I could give that part of myself any sort of development. So, but it was something that I've always sort of looked back on and really sort of lamented, the lack of courage. And that's why one of our values is courage in the school setting. So for me, I just want the kids to be able to have the fullest expression of themselves. And that's why we're open to all kinds of ideas as to what that could mean. So if somebody comes to us and says, okay, I want to teach your kids, which is what happened, how to rebuild a computer. I'm like, I don't know how that works, but come and teach them how to build computers. Because at the end of the day, they must be able to look at problems and the world through as many different lenses as soon as possible that we can provide. And that is why we're trying to, that at the heart of it, that's what we're trying to do. because I need them to see a sand, to see glass, to see money, to see the environment, all as they look at one thing. And that's what kind of the thing you were trying to promote. So I just want kids to have fun, guys. Kids are amazing and they're really, really, really intelligent if people listen to them. And I would like a school that just does that justice. And I would like a school that receives them whole, because they're quite young. So they're actually still quite innocent and eager and whatever, and returns them and gives them to the world still whole. Because you know corporate is tough. I mean, you know entrepreneurship is tough. Life is tough. Being a mother is tough. Being alive is difficult. But can we at least keep them whole until age 18 as much as possible? So that's what we want to do for our kids. And we really enjoy it. We really do enjoy it. It's amazing. It's amazing work. And I just wish more people were willing to sort of put their hands in to get the work done.
Definitely. And it sounds to me like part of the DAO difference, or the DAO Academy difference, is really around that diversity of thought, of expression, of perspectives, and also thinking different ways, so neurodiversity. If you had to put it into, say, three words, what would you say the DAO difference is?
The DAO difference, actually, at the end of it, is our values. So our values are courage, their creativity, and the community. Those are our values. And even though we agreed on them before we set foot in the school, it is amazing how much we have come back to those all the time. Like, is somebody showing courage? Because even now, like, as part of our culture now, when we start a meeting, we must do a values moment. So you must give a shout out to a staff member or a student who you feel in the last few days since the last time you got together has displayed the values. And courage is, the values are that way as well, because they are so ranging, right? So courage for somebody who's really afraid to stand in front of the class may mean actually just getting the courage to stand up and do that. But for somebody else, courage may mean trying out to, I don't know, do a more difficult math problem. So the values will meet you where you are, and you can actually sort of see the growth for yourself no matter where you stand. And so it's actually allows everybody to succeed if they lean into what that means for who they are. So I'm talking a lot. Courage, creativity, and community. And our vision is that we are growing problem solvers, okay? That's three words as well, growing problem solvers. And we keep coming back to it because, like I said, resource constraints. So every time there's a problem, it's like, guys, we are growing problem solvers. We must find a way. So let's try a little bit harder. But yeah, so.
Awesome.
Cheshire, what qualities do you look for in a teacher when you're hiring a teacher? What makes a good teacher?
What makes a good teacher? You know, actually, it's actually a lot more difficult than you realize. Well, at least that I realized when I started. So, but I think really at the end of it, I look for the people who really see people, like who really see people, because you know, and people betray that in small ways without realizing they're doing it. So there are those people whom you will, even just the eye contact or the sort of the smile you will see when nobody's looking. I don't look for the performance part of it, where people stand up and then say, okay, fine, what is water? What is H? Whatever. No, it is about when they talk about their kids, is it coming from a real place? Because those people, I believe, will try. And honestly, there's a lot of them at the school. So that's what I look for. Because I think, I don't know how to explain. One of the things that I really struggle with in the US when I went to college is this whole idea of personal space. I mean, don't get me wrong. I don't want people touching me for no reason. But I really found America to be, for me, it was very lonely because I went there as 18 years old. And I remember coming back after a year and I was like, you know, and I was with my cousins, whatever, my family, whatever. And in Botswana, we don't really have proper sense of personal space at all. And I just remember when I got home, I was thinking, it's been a year and nobody has touched me. Whether intentionally or accidentally, because they're going to give you the space, right? And you're in this space. And human connection is very, very, very important. And I come from Botswana historically. We're having the gap now between the haves and the have-nots has really widened in the last 10 years. But before, this country was actually very flat, like income and sort of social structure-wise. So basically, the president of the country's cousin could be a gardener, or there was not this like families who are sort of isolated from certain levels of society. So for us to not see somebody is really it's a horrible thing. Like when somebody says, "Hori, this person can't see me," and that's all that they say, but there's so much loaded into that statement. Hori, how like I'm a person. Like, I may not be a doctor or lawyer, I may not be Christian, maybe what, but I am a person, and that in itself has value. So I want people who have not forgotten that when who are teaching kids, because those people will try and they will put their hands up and say, this child, I may be able to help them, but somebody in this group must be able to do something to help me sort of get them over. So that's what I look for.
That's super powerful. Just to share, in South Africa, actually, when we greet in Zulu, we say Sawubona, and it actually means I see you. Which really resonates and ties well to what you've said. I think it's one of the uniquely African values that I think is beautiful.
Cheshire, sorry, I've got all these questions. But say we publish this episode with you, people, your message and your story about DAO Academy resonates with one of our listeners who also happens to have a very fat bank account or know someone with a very fat bank account, and they call you up and they say, we would love to invest in the DAO Academy. Are you building with the DAO Academy right now? Are you building something that can be replicated? So you said, I think right now it's 600 students. Can you build a sister DAO Academy somewhere else, or is the model that you've created really limited to your personal attention and that your being there, or is it something that's replicable?
Can it scale?
Yeah.
Well, can we scale? Actually, one of the things that initially, the short answer is yes. But and the other thing that we really sort of trying to be very intentional about is to say, could people come and take a slice? So if you have figured out everything else, but you're struggling with teaching kids technology and technological skills, could you come and look at how we do coding, how we do rebuild desktops, whatever, take that curriculum, take those that piece and go and put it somewhere else? Or could you, if you're even just like an NGO sort of school support service provider, could you decide that if writing communication is important, you come and take the journalism model and then go to a village somewhere else and say, I want to teach this and sort of support the kids already in the school to actually develop these skills. So that was the early thinking, because Botswana is quite small. So that was kind of thinking. But then the other thing around scale is, yes, we would like to be able to go regional and to go sort of larger, because having met the people I've met in the last couple of years, I realized that in terms of the what that we want to achieve, there's different words and the context may vary, but I believe that at the heart of the matter, the idea is to put the child at the middle and to help them be who they want to be. And it may look a little bit different in terms of what that means contextually, depending on what the religion, culture, society, whatever dynamics, population may be. But I think the foundational pieces are such that you can actually then decide, okay, fine, in our context, given that, I don't know, gender-based violence is an issue, or given that girls are excluded from schools, how do we modify that to still achieve the same end while still being able to make it possible for these kids to actually still be able to be a part of this community? Because at the end of the day, you also want to create kids who aren't going to be able to go home, because that's not good for anybody anyway. But yeah, so given a chance, Jed, we would love, I would love to go to Cape Town and spend some quality time in that part of the world. And I'm not saying I have answers for them, because I didn't grow up in Cape Town, but I know there are people in Cape Town or in whatever, in Bulawayo, in Harare, in Mala, in wherever, who actually are in this sort of mindset. But they may need the support that maybe, as much as I'm sort of making fun of my education, it did buy me many skills that are sort of important to bring to bear. Because I've met quite a number of people now, even here, who have ideas around how to support education, but when you're trying to get them to sort of articulate how they're going to do it and what they're going to do, what the piece they're going to be, what the process is going to be, because that's not their training, they can't necessarily do it to the effect they need them to do. So I'm one of those people who, one of my favorite subjects in law school was contracts. So I love taking abstract sort of things and reducing them to clarity. So yes, we could scale, and we would love to scale. Yes.
Cool. And then one more question from me, and I know this is going longer than our required, our desired format, but we'll clip and paste it in ways to make it still compelling in post-production. But Cheshe, is there any national exam in Botswana that all kids need to do? And have your kids at the DAO Academy, how do they track against the other schools? And that might not be a fair metric, but it's like, it's probably one of the only metrics we have. Any comment there?
I mean, honestly, our kids are heads and shoulders above. For the national exam at standard 7, So it's an A, B, C, and C and above is considered a pass. So our kids, the last few years are 100%, including the Cs. Sometimes the last couple of years, we've had some kids who are right under course special consideration, and they've got learning difficulties and they get support to actually, do the work. But we've been number one in our district, and actually, cause they only do it by district, even though if they were to do it across the country, we'd be higher than just in our district, definitely for the end of, standard seven exams. And then at the high school level at, IGCSE, our kids, this year actually was the best, which is, for me, it's shocking. This is why I love my teachers. I mean, it's been 3 years of COVID, but every year since 2020, they have delivered better results every year for the kids. So this year we had, 60s and above, we had 89%, which is amazing and incredible for many reasons. And it's amazing and incredible because there's COVID, resource constraints, all the rest of it. But the other reason it's amazing and great is that, at the high school level in this country, because government is the largest supplier of services, at the national level for high school this year, the last 3 years, the average of 60s and above is less than 13% nationally.
Wow.
Less than 13. And we have, on average, by the time they get to end of high school, we have almost 40,000 kids that write. So the 60s, below the 60s, all those kids do not go on to tertiary or any kind of training, really. And without skills, they can't get jobs. So our kids outperform. And I don't like the exam metric because I don't think it's a true reflection of what kids can do, but it is what we have, so that's what we use. My daughter's having way too much fun back then. But so they do really, really well. But I would, for me, that's not, that should be the least we do for our kids, is where I stand. But even the least we do for our kids still is heads and shoulders above where the national average is, so.
Cheche, last one from me. So I'm a parent sitting in Botswana, really interested. How do your fees compare? Is it accessible? Do you have mechanisms for it to be accessible across a stratum society, or is it for the elite?
Our fees actually are very, very, it's low to mid income. So our fees are anywhere from 50 to 70% of the next level of schools. Because we're in a village, so our price point cannot be city anyway. And our parents that we serve tend to be sort of primarily civil service workers, and then another parent maybe is got a small business or doing something on the side. So yes, so it's nowhere near. That's what I'm saying. Like, the teachers are fantastically incredible. Because even with the limited resources they have, the level of devotion and dedication they show to the kids and the staff as well, has delivered really amazing results. So, and our parents, the parents in the city always say that. We call them and they want to come, and then it's like, but it's 45 kilometers away. So how do I get my kid to a village? So we have, so we need a solution for that. And the solution really is a boarding school. And so we need money. So we need to build a huge, gorgeous, beautiful boarding school in the middle of the village. People need to come from far and wide, including South Africa and Zimbabwe and Malawi and Mozambique, all those countries, and then create a wonderful sort of basket of Africans who are going to change the world.
Great. That's a great way to end, this episode of Boma Chats. Cheche, if people want to follow your progress or if they want to get in touch, what is the best way that they can learn more about the DAO Academy?
Okay, our website is www.thedaoacademy.org, and that's up to date and always online. We're on Facebook, on Insta, on TikTok, we're on all of them. We've got a young set of people running that department, and I don't even understand how some of them work. It does not matter. They're very good at managing them. So we're there. And then info at thedaoacademy, if you have any questions.org, and we're always happy to engage. And of course, my name, Cheche Dao at the DAO Academy, and I will get back to you.